Welcome to webinar number 4, Assessing Your Self-Care Map. Now, before I start talking about self-care, can we agree that self-care is a very individual and a very personal process? I am not going to pretend that the self-care strategies that work for me or work for my colleagues necessarily work for each one of you individually. I found in the past, because I'm always, you know, really interested in this topic, that some of the self-care strategy I read about, I don't know, maybe you've been to an employee wellness talk, or maybe you've read a couple of magazines. I certainly, in the past, have read a lot of books on the topic. You know, I was always interested, certainly when I was doing a lot of research to design these workshops, I was reading a lot of stuff about ideal work-life balance. And, you know, I got a lot of great information from those. I recently heard a keynote speaker who specializes in looking at highly productive people's schedule. So she gets access to their daytimers, and she has a look at, you know, when do they get stuff done. And I do find some of those things inspiring, and there's other times where, depending on what was going on in my life, my reaction was otherwise. It was more like, actually, that is completely unrealistic given my current circumstance. You know, I have a friend who has 2 young children with their twins, and they have very complex health needs, and they're very medically fragile. I don't think that telling her to have a 30-minute bubble bath is necessarily helpful or inspiring, because, first of all, that's never going to happen. And secondly, it may also make her feel overwhelmed and frustrated that that's not even within the realm of what's possible for her. So as I talk about self-care, I just want to be really clear that what I'm offering you are some leads or some guides, but that you need to individually assess what is realistic for you given your current life circumstances, your resources, so on and so forth. So the first thing I'm going to say as a disclaimer is that basically 99.9% of all the strategies I'm going to discuss today are free. Of course, I could say to everyone, you know, you should work part-time, and who doesn't want to do that, you know, and you should have, you know, a cleaner, and you should have, well, but of course, most of us do not have the financial means or the time or the resources to make those things happen. I remember a few years ago, and this is absolutely no disrespect intended to Oprah, but Oprah magazine had written a thing on decluttering. And I remember that I read the magazine, you know, tongue in cheek, because she talked about having, you know, a crew of 52 people building her, you know, whatever, fancy shelves from like some old growth forest or, you know, in one of her 40 homes. And I was thinking, well, good for you, Oprah, but that does not inspire me to somehow go back to my house that is mostly, you know, made of IKEA furniture. Like, you know what I'm saying. It just didn't feel congruent or in line with what was realistic or achievable for me. So I'm going to talk about strategies today that have nothing to do with working less, although I would highly obviously recommend it if that's something that's even within the realm of the possible, but more about kind of individual personal assessments that we can carry out to kind of decide where we can start. And I want to talk to you about a wonderful book that I came across in the late 90s that was really an incredible resource and continues to be an incredible resource for me. The book is called Take Time for Your Life. And Take Time for Your Life, I believe, was published in 1999. And it was written by Cheryl Richardson. Cheryl Richardson is a life coach, and she tells a really interesting story in her book. She used to be a tax consultant, and she was basically helping, I'll be honest with you, I don't really know what tax consultants do, but I believe they're some type of financial planner. And she used to help people deal with, you know, their taxes and their whatever, their budgets and stuff like that. And she talks about how at some point she had really kind of lost her enjoyment of her job. And the only parts of her job she was really still enjoying were kind of helping people figure out their priorities. You know, where are you spending most of your time? What matters to you? And she tells this kind of incredible story at the beginning of her book where she was kind of on her way to work one day, really kind of thinking, I'm kind of done with this. I don't want to do this anymore. And she's on her way. She's about 2 blocks away from her work, and she sees these massive clouds above her, big black clouds and flames. And she got to her work and her office, nobody was hurt, but her office was on fire. It literally burnt to the ground. And I remember her, you know, writing that at that point she was like, oh, well, I guess that's my message that, you know, my job as a task consultant is literally gone up in flames. And so she retrained and became a life coach. And this book is wonderful, first of all, because it is completely gender neutral. This book is not specifically for men or women. It really is for everyone. And I was introduced by it by a colleague of mine. I talk about this in my book, who was someone who was a professional, and she was definitely on the fast track to having a pretty serious health or emotional crisis. She was incredibly overworked. She had three very young children, including twins. She had her partner had just lost his job, and she was actually a psychologist doing a lot of assessments, as you see in the schools. So she was doing LD, ADHD assessments, and she was working nonstop. She had stopped doing all the things that used to be good for her. So she used to be a track athlete in high school. You know, she used to love being physically active. She had stopped all of those things. She had a house she couldn't afford. You know, she was really in dire straits. And she didn't know how to change anything because she had to keep working to keep it all going. So she went to see a counselor. And her counselor recommended this book and said, let's work through each chapter together one at a time. And so when I heard about that, I got the book, and I can't tell you, I mean, there are lots of books I could recommend. This is absolutely, to this day, my number one book for figuring out realistically what are the drains in our energy and where we can begin. So if you're interested, I highly recommend that you check this book out. In it, Cheryl Richardson has several tests. One of them is called Are You Running on Adrenaline? And she gets us to kind of do a checklist, you know, do we always get to appointments with 2 minutes to spare, or do we get there half an hour early and read a book? Do we always have, you know, almost, you know, no gas in our car? Like, what are the things day to day that we're doing, which, and I understand, many of us are really busy and are trying to squeeze more into a day than we have time for, but she really gets you to start looking at, what are little places where we could build in some miniature micro breaks where we could learn to kind of catch our breath? So that's the first thing I wanted to say. So I work with a lot of different professions, as I've mentioned to you before, and sometimes when I work with first responders and law enforcement, I ask for the opportunity to do a ride-along so that I can get a better understanding of what it's like. So a few years ago, I was working with Frontenac Paramedic Services, and I had not worked with paramedics before, so I was really interested in spending a day, you know, in the truck, getting a sense of what's it like to do this job. And I did the same when I worked with law enforcement in a variety of places. And one of the things that struck me when I was spending time with first responders is that they have a lot of really concrete skills, right? So a paramedic, an advanced care paramedic, knows how to intubate, they know how to put an IV line, they know how to resuscitate. I mean, these are really skilled folks. And I'm sure some of you are also highly skilled. Maybe you know first aid, maybe you know how to do nonviolent de-escalation. You know, a lot of us have a, kind of a pretty complex toolkit. And I started thinking about that, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know how to do a lot of concrete, hard stuff. I don't know first aid, I'll be honest. I don't know how to drive a stick shift in a car. I don't know how to hang a shelf. I just took a break between recording webinars and successfully sprayed myself with our hose because it's broken, and I don't know how to fix it. Like, you know, I joke that, you know, in the woods I would live probably 30 seconds and I'd be eaten by a bear. So I started thinking about what is it that are the unique skill sets of folks in our fields that are not the concrete kind of behavioral management pieces, but what are the skills that we have? And I want to try this out with you and see whether you agree. One of the things that I know I have as a counselor is I know that I know how to be on. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, have you ever been at work and you dealt with a really hard to reach student and you did a really good job and you thought to yourself, you know what? I was, like, you know, I talked about flow earlier. I was on today. I was at my best. And I realized that one of the things that I'm really good at is I know how to connect with people. When I'm in a good place, give me the toughest, hard to reach, most difficult, you know, my favorite clients used to be soldiers, big tough guys covered in tattoos who did not want to do any counseling, and they're sitting there with their arms crossed. They're my favorite people if I'm in a good place. Now, if I've been up all night with a sick child, or I've gone to bed too late because I was watching too much Netflix, or I had a deadline, I don't do well. So I started thinking about what are the essential elements that we each one of us need to have in order to be able to do this work in our best possible way. So I called it the balance map, and I'm going to show you right now just a blank 9 rectangles, right? Just 9 squares or rectangles. And I'm going to invite you as we think about this to think about, and I'm going to show you some examples, what are the essential elements that need to be in place for you to be able to do your best work. Now, as I said, this is very individual, so I'll give examples of people in my life, and all of us have different priorities. So as I mentioned in a previous webinar, unfortunately, I need a lot of sleep. I can handle 6 or 7 hours on a regular basis, 2 or 3 days in a row, but if I haven't had more than that, at some point, it starts catching up with me. And I know that when I had young children, and one of them, my daughter with ADHD, only slept 45 minutes at a time, I was quite frankly a bit of a mess. I can't think straight. I'm more irritable. And yet, for other people in my life, they just don't need that much sleep. My partner can function cognitively. He can do some pretty high-level, complicated science stuff with 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. Now, don't get me wrong. It catches up to him at the end of the week, but he is able to function. I have a friend who cannot, you know, be in her best frame of mind unless she has exercised. She has a lot of, you know, extra energy. And for her, that's the most important. So as you fill this out, so I'm going to show you how I filled it out, but I really want to invite you to think about, if these don't land for you, put something else in those boxes. So let me show you what this looks like. So for me, as I said, so if you're going to see here the one in the top middle there, physical health, that one matters to me more than anything else. We've all gone to work feeling sick. We've all gone to work having not slept enough or, you know, not feeling 100%. We know the difference between feeling good and not feeling good. Now, for me, physical health has 3 components. Definitely lots of sleep, probably number one. I think that's the most important one for me personally. Number 2 is physical exercise, although I do not enjoy it. I don't like exercising, but I realized years ago when I was a kid growing up, I had a lot of anxiety. And it turns out, of course, my parents' marriage was unraveling and finally they got divorced when I was 9, but I didn't know that because I didn't fight. But there was a lot of stuff going on in my household that was unspoken. And so as a child, I used to have all of these physical manifestations. So I was a very anxious kid, had a really hard time sleeping, I had a lot of stomach aches. And it wasn't until I was well into my early 20s that I realized that the only way I could manage my anxiety was by exercising. And what I realized is that if I exercise 4 times a week, I don't have any anxiety. So again, it's very individual, but it turns out that for me, whatever brain chemicals I need to keep me well are essentially manufactured only through exercise. So I don't like exercising. If I didn't have to, I probably never would. But I've realized now that that's my medicine. And I'd much rather get up and do 4 hours of exercise a week than feel crappy, so if that makes sense. The third one I felt in terms of physical health is eating healthy, but not all the time. I have a lot of friends who try to eat well, especially, you know, January, New Year's resolution. And, of course, after 3 weeks, that all goes out the window because they feel deprived, and when you feel deprived, you end up binging. So I believe in having some treats, but it doesn't have to be all the time, and it also doesn't have to be treats, you know, every day, all the time, everything. And when I travel a lot, I know that when I'm not eating the greatest foods, when I'm not having enough, for example, protein and fats and greens, it catches up with me because I start feeling crummy. So those are just mine. Maybe they're not the same for you. So let's go through a few of these and invite you to think about what would you put in this map. And I'm going to actually put this on the website so you can have a fillable, you know, form for yourself. So number one, physical health. I've talked about that already. Maybe that's the one you'd put number one, maybe not. So there's a couple of things that are kind of fun that have been put out there, and we know, you all know about self-care. We are told this stuff. We know intellectually. The Institute of Cardiology in Montreal implemented something some years ago called a 5:30 challenge. And what they do is they invite workplaces, I think it's in the month of March, to do the following. For 1 month, eat 5 fruit and vegetables a day, not 10, just a total of 5, and move your body 30 minutes a day. That could even just be a nice walk. It doesn't have to be like CrossFit or anything. So some years ago, I did this with my family because my family is incredibly competitive, and we didn't even need a prize at the end. You know what I mean? Like, they just wanted to win. So I made a little chart for the month, and I said to my kids and my partner, we're going to do this 5:30 challenge, and at the end of the month, we'll see who wins. And it was really cute because my kids were young enough, it never occurred to them they could lie, which is adorable. And so what they did is every day they started, you know, bringing carrots to school and juicing and doing all that stuff. And I remember one day about 2 weeks into the challenge, they were supposed to be in bed, and all of a sudden I heard footsteps in the kitchen. It's like 10:30 at night. And there's my daughter, you know, who's like 8 years old, eating a pear really, really fast. And I said, what are you doing? And she said, I went to bed. I hadn't had my 5, and I'm not going to lose, you know. And so what's interesting is, although it was never something that we hammered out, you know, there were treats in the house and stuff, but I just wanted to model to them that some of these things make a big difference. And now, you know, my daughter is a very high-level athlete, and she has incorporated that in her daily life, and we don't even need to talk about it anymore. The sleep debt test. To test whether you have a sleep debt, some of you know you do because you have interrupted sleep due to chronic fatigue or chronic pain, or maybe you're a caregiver and you get woken up for whatever reason. But if you're not sure, if you're not a shift worker, which I know most of you are not because you're working in the schools, the invitation is at around 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon on a day where you're not working, lie somewhere in a darkened room for 10 minutes. If you fall asleep, that's your sleep debt. If you're struggling throughout the day and you have moments where you have to super caffeinate yourself to get through, you have not enough sleep, and it's called a sleep debt. So here we go. The second one that matters in my life, and again, may not in yours, is simplifying. What I mean by that, I'm not saying that your house needs to be real estate ready. I'm not saying that it's not okay to have dirty dishes. Those things are fine, and they're very individual. I have a friend who would much rather leave the dishes go for a while and actually go outside and enjoy fresh air. That's totally cool. Some of the things, though, that I want to invite you to think about is, how do you start your days? Your weekdays, are they hectic? Do you end up having the mad scramble in the morning to find the things that we're missing? And the keynote speaker I heard a few weeks ago talked about, she plans she doesn't plan in terms of days, she plans her time in terms of weeks, you know, a week at a time. So one of the things that I do, and it doesn't take a lot of time, is if I'm going to have a very busy week, I spend a few minutes on Sunday looking ahead and thinking about what are the things I'm going to need. If it's time to take my snow tires and have them turned over, you know, installed or removed, maybe what I'm going to do is put those snow tires somewhere that I can find them so that the morning that it's time for that, it's not going to be a mad scramble. You know what I'm talking about. It's really nice when it's income tax time to be able to find the piece of paper that you're supposed to give to do your income tax, those kinds of things. And I think that sometimes there's such a level of chaos because we're overwhelmed. We get home, we're exhausted. I'm not saying you should spend your weekend putting things in alphabetical orders, but just maybe focusing on a couple of elements that can make a really big difference to not feeling like you're constantly scrambling. I read, I'll get to that later. I read a really good book recently, and I'll talk about it in a minute. The other thing that's a really tricky conversation is setting limits with friends and family. I've found that a lot of folks who are educators or are in the field of educational services and support in any way, we tend to also be go-tos for members of our family. I don't know if that's true for you. I certainly find that if someone's in crisis in my extended family, I'm often the one who gets the call. I have friends sometimes who tend to turn to me, just like they probably call my friend who's a family doctor when they have a weird rash. Some of that is completely fine, and I'm sure you'd agree that sometimes we're more than happy to help. And there are other times where we just don't have any more to give. And so one of the things that I started doing, and I won't lie to you, it was not super popular, but I started screening my calls. I started being a lot more, you know, like careful about how much I offered to do. And there's times where I was more than happy to help. And then I felt like I could truly say, yes, you're sick. You need some soup. You need me to take care of your child. I'm going to say yes because I really want to do it, not because I think I should. Now, what I've found is when we set limits, sometimes there's pushback. And I'll never forget at some point a friend of mine leaving a message on my phone going, screening your calls again. And I thought to myself, yes, exactly. I'm screening my calls from you. So one of the homework I invite you to do is to think about, I'm going to revisit that in a minute, those of you who say yes too much in your personal life, is there one thing you could turn down? And those of you who actually have stopped saying yes and you're kind of like constantly saying no, is there something where you could start looking at, you know, kind of adding that back into your life? But I'll revisit that in a minute. I read a really good book a few weeks ago, and it's by Kate Flanders, and it's called A Year of Less. And it's basically a book about a young woman. She's in her 30s, I think, and she is not someone who's, you know, making a big income. And she started realizing that she had started shopping and spending in a way that just didn't make sense for her. But instead of being yet another financial makeover, you know, pay off your credit card debt, blah, 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 which we all know, but, you know, a lot of us don't do it because we can't afford it. I really recommend this book because she talked about spending an entire year trying not to shop, trying not to buy unless she really needed it. And I just found it a very inspiring reflection on the whole process of consumerism. And one of the things, and I don't know if you find that, one of the things I have found is I spend more when I'm too busy. So when I have a little bit more time on my hands, I may have more energy and time to go on Kijiji and look for some secondhand hockey skates for my kid. But when I don't have time, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just going to run to the store, buy the ones I can't afford or that are too expensive. And so it was just a really interesting reflection about how the more we create a little bit of space and time in our personal lives, the more we end up having, you know, more time and energy for the things that matter. The third one is stress relief. Again, that's very individual. And kind of thinking about, these don't have to be mega big, you know, all weekend retreats. Maybe it's just half an hour at the end of each day. Have you got some time each day to just catch your breath and do something you really enjoy? And also an invitation to think about what are restorative activities for you. And I don't know, but watching half an hour of Netflix, I find cool. Watching more than that doesn't feel that restful. It's just more like, it's kind of like eating the whole bag of chips and at the end you're like, meh, you know. And so I really started thinking about, because I need a lot of time on my own because I'm constantly in contact with people, as you are, and I will spend some family time, you know, after dinner, but then I really do. I want to go and have a little bit of time to myself. And I really thought about what are the activities I want to do during that limited, even if it's 15 minutes. Is it Sudoku? Is it whatever? You fill in the blank of things that you enjoy doing. The next one is how I react to change. I'm going to talk more about that in a later webinar, so I'm going to leave that for now. But it's just kind of part of the map of understanding what is my reaction to change and uncertainty. And it's a whole other conversation we're going to have. Social support is another one we're going to discuss at longer length a little bit later. What are engaging work and hobbies? As I mentioned earlier, a few webinars ago, I realized that working in this field and that my quote-unquote hobby was volunteering at the maximum security prison, that maybe was not such a good idea. Although I enjoy giving back, I started realizing that I was never resetting. I was never having a chance to do something that was not involving pain, suffering, and trauma. Now, I know that some of you probably do this already. I've met a lot of folks, for example, who volunteer for a sports team, you know, and they find that very restorative, providing they're not caught up in any weird sports drama, which my children used to play soccer, and there was a lot of drama there. I didn't find it very relaxing, but you know what I'm talking about. Trauma stewardship, we will discuss a little bit later in another webinar. It's about managing exposure to difficult and traumatic stories and events. Managing occupational stress and resentment. There's a whole other webinar on that one because it's a really big topic. And finally, giving back, but giving back in a way that, as I said, isn't necessarily depleting. So there are times where I was a hospice volunteer for 3 years, and I really enjoyed that. But at some point, I started traveling too much for work, and it just didn't work with my schedule. I didn't want to leave, you know, palliative care patients with me being away. It didn't seem fair. So I really started thinking about there are other ways to feel like we're giving back, and some of them are not necessarily a formal volunteering activity. And I want to invite you to think about that in your own work and in your own personal lives. What are ways that we can give back? And to also understand that giving back and volunteering can also happen on a life timeline. It doesn't all have to happen when you are at your busiest time of your life with caregiver duties and others. I've often met people who are closer to retirement, and then they have time. And so not somehow expecting that, you know, we have to do all these things all the time. I think that some of us, that's how we end up running ragged and not having the time and energy to refuel. So there's a really nice activity that we do in our workshops, and it's called What's on Your Plate? And What's on Your Plate, and I will actually put it on the website as well in terms of resources, it's an activity that invites you to kind of look at, you know, what are all your duties and commitments and activities? Like what right now, if you got up on a weekday morning, what are the things that are, you know, absolutely there? Walk the dog, make my lunch, you know, all of that stuff. And then I invite you to kind of look and see which are these things, if you could just wave a magic wand, which of these things would you like to have taken off your plate, even if you can't, even if it's totally unrealistic. And then I walk through with you an activity of getting to think about, are there any of these things where you can make a 1% change, a micro movement, one thing? And I really believe that for self-care, the only way to start is not making these massive New Year's resolutions. I don't believe in those. You've all, you know, heard the stats that the gyms sell more memberships in January than ever, you know, in the year, and then only 10% of people who buy a gym membership use it. So I believe in weekly assessments. I believe that on my Sunday, I sit down and, you know, my weekends are busy and I've got a lot of stuff going on like everybody else, but I just take half an hour to kind of think about, what could I add to my week in terms of my self-care? I also don't believe in the big beat up, you know, the what's wrong with you and why did he do this last week. I believe really in looking ahead and with compassion, thinking about what do I need more of? And so I might see the week ahead and say, you know what, I need half an hour more sleep, or I need more cucumber in my life. I'm just saying that. But, you know, little things so that we can really feel like we're moving forward towards helping ourselves without having these massive commitments that just, quite frankly, don't end up panning out very often. So I'm going to post those activities on the website so that you can actually have them. And I want to invite you again, if you have any questions, just get in touch with us. And I'll see you in the next webinar.